Hello and welcome to SOC Unlocked, Tales from the Cybersecurity Frontline. I'm Mick Leach, your host and guide on this exciting adventure into the SOC universe. In each episode, I chat with various cybersecurity professionals about the latest in industry news, emerging threats, practical strategies to keep your organization safe, and much more. And this week, we are excited to have Anthony Coggins. Anthony, welcome to the show. It's good to have you.
Yeah, thanks for the invite. And it's been a minute since we talked, so I'm glad to get to catch up as well.
Absolutely. And for our listeners who may not know, Anthony and I go way back. We've done a couple of different webinars together and podcasts. We've done a bunch of stuff together.
We have, yeah. Yeah, it's been an eventful last couple of years for sure. Yeah, and where we've both, you know, made some nice changes in hops as well during that time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, but before we dive too deeply into those topics, what I wanted to do is give you an opportunity to introduce yourself to our listeners. Would ask that you kind of tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, what your current role is, and mostly how did you get here?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Anthony Coggins, and I'm the Director of Information Security at Acrisure and the Vice President of the West Michigan Cloud Security Alliance. I've been in the industry one form or another since 2010. So what's that, 14 years now? And, you know, started, you know, in IT at the help desk doing password resets. And, you know, I started my career in K-12, so helping teachers with their projectors and, you know, all that fun stuff through experience. And, you know, I had a lot of good mentors and leaders throughout my years. Eventually made it to where I am today.
That's awesome. You know, it is that aspect of kind of the career progression that I find so interesting with all of our guests, because what I've learned already and continue to learn each time we have these conversations is that everyone's journey into cybersecurity is unique. You know, some folks came from a heavy development background. Many folks come from like an IT support background. That's where we got started, myself included. And heaven knows you were doing the Lord's work there supporting teachers. That is a thankless job and tons of work. So I get that. But that's what I love, because there are a lot of listeners that aspire to a role in cybersecurity. And they think maybe, you know, it can be disconcerting. It can feel like there's no chance. You know, right. I just don't know enough.
I need all the certs, or I need the master's degree, or I need whatever before anybody will even consider it.
Yeah. Exactly. Because let's be honest, imposter syndrome is real. And I don't know about you. I definitely still to this day feel it.
I get it multiple times a day, probably. Yeah. Like, you know, should I really be in this conversation? Like, you know, I think I can speak to this, you know, but even though, you know, I know whatever the topic is, like the back of my hand, but it happens to everybody. And I think, you know, not to go too much on a tangent here, but
it's all right.
The imposter syndrome effect is a sign of competency. It's what I tell other people. I try to tell myself, but I mostly tell other people who tell me they have imposter syndrome that it's a sign that you know that there are things you don't know.
Right? Yeah.
So if you look at like the Dunning-Kruger effect, you know, there's that curve, and you know, you get to the top, and you've been in the industry for, you know, 2 or 3 years or whatever, and you think you know it all, right? And you're super confident. And I think they call that Mount Stupid, right? Because what it takes to come off that mountain is you deleting a whole DNS zone, or deleting a database, or, you know, just having yourself humbled, which realizes that, you know, I don't actually know everything. And so you start to build your competency and your expertise, but always understanding that there's still more I don't know. There's still more I need to learn.
Yeah.
And so that imposter syndrome is a sign of, you know, your overall great knowledge in the space. So,
and I'm glad you brought up the Dunning-Kruger effect. I saw this firsthand at a previous company years ago now. This would have been, goodness, got to be 10, 12 years ago now. And we were building out a SOC at a major insurance company, and we were building out a security operations center, and we took a self-assessment. So our leadership said, well, let's see what you feel like you know, which is a good start. And then we'll kind of scrub that against what we feel like you know. based on, you know, what you're doing on the daily. Yeah. And then we'll kind of see where we're at. And that'll help us understand where the strengths of the team lie and maybe where there are some gaps in terms of knowledge. Great idea. So we did this, and when the results came back, we all shared them, and we did this, you know, open notes, mm-hmm. shared them with the team, and everybody looked at them and went, wait, you're like the smartest guy in the room. Why are you rating yourself like a 3 in most areas? And he's like, because I know guys that are way smarter than me. And then we had some more junior folks that rated themselves very highly because they were comparing themselves against like their friends and their family and their neighbors and the people that they've kind of surpassed in their knowledge and kind of considered themselves above. It was interesting. And I remember looking at the results, and I'd never heard of Dunning-Kruger at that point. Mm-hmm. And so I remember looking at the results thinking, man, this is wild. I've never seen anything like this. And one of my leaders came in and said, oh, no, this is classic Dunning-Kruger. In fact, it was Mick Douglas who said it, who was my first podcast guest. Mick said, nah, this is classic Dunning-Kruger. And I was like, say more, because this is not a phrase I'm familiar with. Tell me more. And he went on to explain it. And then we both went and looked it up. And I was like, well, hot dog, that's exactly what we're looking at here. So, you know, it's fascinating that still exists today in each and every one of us. But as we grow to learn more, I think to your point, the realization that there's so much more to learn really humbles you and makes you feel like you're not quite as far as you are.
100%. Yeah.
So all that to say that every journey is valid into cybersecurity. We all get here with a past, and none of the two journeys are the same, and that's okay. So now I want to really dive in. In this podcast, we typically do sort of a past, present, future. So in terms of past, would love to hear about some particularly challenging cybersecurity threat or attack that you've seen, that you've encountered, that you responded to, and what that looked like.
Back when I was doing K-12 IT support, we used to have a separate school district that was called the Alternative Education. These kids were, you know, not always the best behaved. And one time, I got a ticket into the system saying one of the computers had a weird sound and it wouldn't start. It's like, okay, well, that's, you know, weird, but, you know, these kids were notorious for, you know, taking the rubber bands out of the CD drives. And back in the day of XP, like the BIOS would check if each attached device was working. And so when it checked the CD drive, it would make this god-awful noise, right? So I figured maybe that's what it was. So I, you know, drive over there and I walk in and the kids start snickering. So I already know something weird, you know, I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. So I walk over to the computer, push the button, and there is just this god-awful noise coming from inside the case. Well, that's weird. And there's, you know, a CRT monitor, which is sitting on top of the computer, which is on its side. So, you know, take the CRT off, unscrew the case, pop it open. And when I take the case off, I'm flabbergasted because there is a whole corn dog shoved in the CPU. I mean, I'm just standing there looking at it and thinking like, okay, first of all, thanks for this, kid. but secondly, like, teacher, this kid had to have taken the CRT monitor off, unscrewed the case, shoved this corn dog in here and screwed it back on, and you didn't know. Like, come on, man. And so that was the time I found a corn dog in a computer. I'll never forget that as long as I live.
I'm just glad they didn't go the grumpy old men route and put like a fish in there.
Right.
Because boy, that would get that'd get rough pretty quickly. Plus, that fan would probably help distribute. This is not, by the way, an endorsement or an idea for you listening, folks. although, if you do, like, subscribe, and tell us about it. Anyway, hilarious stuff.
Yeah. So I think this is a mix of past and present. The uptick in MFA bypass attacks. And the types of more advanced social engineering that's being done is anything like we've, you know, never seen before. but it's not new, right? Mm-hmm. It's just next level. So I think MFA bypass is a commodity at this point, right? You have organizations still struggling to get basic MFA in place. But we need to be talking about the next step, which is passwordless authentication, which is, you know, FIDO2, passkey, you know, whatever the term we're going to eventually standardize on here. And we need to be moving our employees and our parents and, you know, our grand, you know, everybody to these methods, because everybody gets phished. No filter's perfect. No person is perfect. We're seeing less and less attacks that are traditional credential gatherers, right? They all have MFA bypass built in at this point, or MFA downgrade attacks, right? So if you know, I have the passkey, I have a YubiKey, I have Windows Hello, you know, whatever the thing is. But if my attack is downgrading that to SMS or push because I'm not enforcing passwordless, then you're still open to that, right? So that's something we've seen a lot of in the past. And, you know, so pushing the passwordless envelope is kind of the present and future kind of for me. And then, man, the social engineering with deepfakes and voice cloning and calling the help desk and, you know, all of that, we're only going to see more and more of that. There's always been some of that. And, you know, pen testers have been doing this for years, right? You know, trying to get somebody's password by calling the help desk. But I think of cyber criminals who are doing this, and cyber criminals who sound like whoever's answering the call, right? So, you know, that those attacks, I think, are what organizations need to be focusing on, and what past attacks that, you know, we've dealt with and, you know, have put in place.
Absolutely. So there was a lot there to unpack, right? We talked a little bit about what we've seen in the past. Do you have any examples of some of the things that you've come across over the years that you can share, right? I understand you have a job and, you know, you don't want to share anything too private in terms of our companies. But anonymized data, are there any attacks over the years that kind of followed that you're willing to share or able to share?
Yeah. One that didn't personally happen to me or a company I worked for, but one I read about in the past, just earlier, like I think it was late last year, an executive in Hong Kong got a deepfake call from his CEO and CFO. And he's, you know, the call was about a wire and it was something upwards of like millions. It might've been like $100 million. All I know is it was a huge amount. Right. And sounded like his CFO, looked like his CFO, right? Like had all the same, you know, I mean, there was no reason not to believe him. It was a Zoom call and he called him, right? And, you know, he made the wire transfer. And when they eventually found out that this happened, they called him and like, why did you do this? And he was super confused because he said, you told me to.
Right.
Right. So those specific attacks are just terrifying, right? So the mechanisms of protective keywords or some sort of AI protection that isn't built yet, you know, are things that, you know, we need to be looking at for that. But, you know, those attacks I've been following very closely because they're just fascinating and quite troublesome, I think.
Yeah. And you know what with social engineering in particular, what strikes me is both odd and just unusual is that even though we are 30 or 40 years on now, you know, you still go back to one of the best hackers, Kevin Mitnick. I can, you know, I know story after story after story about Kevin, who is a dear friend of Dave Kennedy, who we just had on the show a couple of weeks ago. And so, you know, Kevin, his big claim to fame was not actually anything all that technical. His big claim to fame was just that he could convince good people to do something they shouldn't do. And that's really, no matter how far we've gotten with all the technical security controls that we all bring to the table, there's still a human at the end of the chain that is susceptible to being tricked. You know, it's crazy to see those things. You know, John Strand has a great story. I don't know if you've ever heard this one about I think it was a webinar or something along those lines. He did a talk and it was like, I sent my mom to prison and then we had cake. And he was doing a physical pen test. Well, physical slash, digital pen test of a prison system. And he got his mom to go in and plug a bunch of rubber duckies in and just a great story about how, you know, she was able to convince hardened prison guards to let her into places she shouldn't be, left her alone and let her cause could have caused a whole bunch of problems. So
yeah,
crazy, crazy stuff.
Yeah. I mean, they say if you walk into a place wearing a suit, looking like you're in a hurry, most people hold the door open for you. Or if you're carrying six boxes of pizza and you say, oh, can you get the door for me? You know, my keys, in the pocket, whatever. Everybody wants to be nice and polite, right? Who's going to say, well, hold up, buddy, where's your ID badge? The people side of it is both our greatest strength and vulnerability, right? So, we talk about security awareness training and it's important and we need to do that, but how do you attain that meaningful, awareness of the human firewall aspect of it? We need to continuously kind of just tweak and work on.
Yeah, agreed. And this is why attackers drive me crazy, because they're capitalizing on the good nature of people who are trying to do the right thing, to be kind, these are attributes we want to, promote in society. And yet these are the exact attributes that that bad actors are capitalizing on. So enough on that one. You talked a little bit about what the biggest threat I think that you feel like are facing SOX today. Is that the social engineering and MFA bypass? Is that right?
Yeah, I'd say to steal a term from my CISO, the MFA apocalypse is upon us. And, the four horsemen are here. And if you don't have your passwordless, shield available, you're going to be in a rough spot for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And part of the challenge with implementing MFA is getting over that hurdle of impacting users. We in security, there's this aversion to making life hard for our users. And that's a good thing to pursue, but there's a point to which that's got to stop. Right. And yes, yeah. I don't think, you and I, we've been using MFA for many years now. It's not that big of a hurdle to overcome. More than that is that the MFA solutions today that are available to us are so frictionless now.
Well, the passwordless solutions we have are more secure and easier for the end user, right? I don't have to remember a password.
Mm-hmm.
It's, if we're using Windows Hello, it's your face. It's a PIN that is biometrically hard-coded into your TPM chip. It's, it's a YubiKey that you touch and it logs you in. I mean, these make it less friction increase the user experience while also increasing security. It's literally a win-win, on all aspects of it. It's just, you just gotta do it, man. I know it's hard because we've been saying 14 character password and, all this other stuff, MFA, and it really is a new fork in the road that we all just have to go attack together.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. So looking into the future, I mean, are these the kinds of advancements and changes that you foresee in the field of cybersecurity? How does that change? And, how do you think that really impacts security operations in particular?
I don't think there'll be a ton of adoption or advancement until there's a big enough problem, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, I would love for everybody to be proactive and, go start rolling out Windows Hello today and what that would mean for your company and all that. But until there's enough attacks that the world is seeing with MFA bypasses and, enough regulations that start to require it because, let's be frank, many companies are only doing MFA because they have a regulation or a contract that says they have to, right? So until we get to that point, I think it'd only be the brave souls who, you know, continue to adopt that. But what does pastorless, I think, you know, mean for the SOC? It means the end of remote account takeovers. You're always going to have social engineering and other things, but we're talking about a huge sector of risk and attack that once we get to a point where enough people are doing it, we're erasing it overnight, which is, I think, something everybody needs to be striving for.
Yeah, agreed wholeheartedly. So kind of transitioning now, we've talked a little bit about the past, the present, the future. And I know we talked a little bit about, you know, getting into cybersecurity on the front end of the podcast. But what I would love to ask is like, what advice would you give to someone that is looking to get into security as a field, or even more specifically into security operations?
I would say that people who have IT or help desk experience are super underrated. All of my best people have come from a background of general IT. And do you know why that is? Because I can teach them security. I don't have to teach them IT, right?
Yes.
I'm going to go on a bit of another tangent here, so bear with me. Our higher education systems at large are failing cyber students today because they are coming out with 40 to 100 grand in debt to have a cybersecurity degree, but they don't know how DNS works. Mm. They couldn't tell me what a subnet is, and they've never heard of Active Directory. Right? How do you expect to get a job if you don't have those mundane based skills, right? So for anybody wanting to get into cybersecurity, you have to be a very special person, I think, to just hop right into it. You have to have some level of IT exposure or experience, even if that's a 1 year at help desk, right? I would hire a level 2, level 3 help desk person or a sysadmin or a former DBA or a network engineer or whatever any day of the week over somebody with just a bachelor's degree in cybersecurity. And I'm sorry to say that because it is unfortunate, but the skill set is just so lacking with these new graduates.
I wish I could disagree, because I am an advisor. I'm on advisory committee for one of the local colleges, their cybersecurity degree program. And it's been my joy and my pleasure to be able to contribute to that. But each time we do talk about, you know, some of the challenges is that the tooling that the schools are leveraging, not just in terms of teaching, but as a whole, you know, that many of the colleges are using G Suite across the board, right? You're turning papers in on, you know, Google Classroom, and they're all using Google Mail. And so everything is Google oriented because Microsoft's pretty expensive. And so many times it doesn't make sense for the student body to have that. But unfortunately, most corporations are running on Microsoft. And so you're right when you said it's the first time they've heard Active Directory or seen it. That you're right. It bothers me, but you're right because that's the case. You know, another good example is that for years, schools have been leveraging Cisco did a great job of getting, you know, their hardware into school systems all over the country. Like the local high school here has like a Cisco Academy program, right? That you can
CCNA or whatever, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You get your CCNA by the time you graduate high school. Super cool. That's great stuff because you're right. You're learning the basics on a lot of stuff. Many of the companies that I've been at over the years have transitioned from Cisco hardware to other layer 7 firewall kinds of things,
right?
You know, application security based firewalls, things like Palo Alto and, you know, Fortinet. And there's a lot of big players in this world.
Yeah.
But the students that are coming out have never seen any of that. So they are ill prepared and yet saddled with a ton of debt.
Yeah.
So
I think we need to collectively decide that IT and cybersecurity. It's actually a trade, right? Because you don't really learn it until you're doing it. I know that's true for a lot of things, but it really is true for IT because you have so many layers, complexities, systems, all these. You can't possibly expect a collegiate system, which moves fairly slow for updating curriculum and like that, to ever keep up with the pace and speed of technology, right? As far as keeping up to date with the latest. Getting exposure to Palo or Active Directory or any of that, it's just an unfortunate gap we have today. So to wrap all that up, I would say, get exposure to IT, find a help desk job, work at an MSP, grind for a couple of years, and then decide where you want your specialty to be. Because you might decide it's not in cyber. You might find, I really like writing applications. I really like SQL, so I want to be a DBA somewhere. I really like network, so I'm going to go, be a, Palo expert and, do this other stuff. So that would be my advice for anybody looking to get into cyber or IT in general. It's just, you just got to find that entryway. Your first job is always going to be the hardest. And then you just start climbing the ladder.
Yeah. So I like that. I like that. And you heard it here first, folks. IT and cybersecurity are becoming a trade. That's what Anthony Coggins had to say here. And I agree. I agree. I think that there are ways, knowledge is knowledge. And you can come by knowledge in a variety of ways. And none of them are discounted. Mm-hmm. You want to take a formal education and you want to go that route, great. Great. Love that for you. Because it's often what I've experienced, and your mileage may vary, but what I've experienced with folks that I hire that have a traditional four-year education, either in, IT or maybe in the newer world, cybersecurity, those folks have a better base than many of the folks that learn are self-taught, because the base is broad and they spend a lot of time in it, and it's old school stuff. And so they have a better foundational understanding of how many of the things worked. But then you get these self-study folks that maybe don't have the basis of how some of those things work, but they built way above it. And so their knowledge is also valuable, but it's all self-taught. And then there's the certification folks that went to, CompTIA or maybe you have a rich grandpa and you went to SANS, or, there's lots of options, but, there are folks that come out with information from those organizations as well. And I'm of the opinion that all of those routes to knowledge are valid and good.
It's no wrong path, for sure.
Thank you. Yes, agreed. So if someone can only take away one thing from this wide-ranging, fun conversation that we've had so far, what would you have them hear? What would you have them take away from this chat?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I would say, don't be intimidated by the breadth of cybersecurity and just start doing it. Start doing things you're uncomfortable with and get comfortable being uncomfortable. Get comfortable learning things that you've never touched or seen before. Get comfortable with talking to people, because their networking is and will always be an advantage to you getting a better job, making connections to peers to, get more skills, whatever that might be. Networking is something you should always be doing as well. Don't lose hope on what you want to do, and just keep grinding away.
Okay. So networking, I'm going to double click into that just because I think there's value here. How? Right? Because our listeners are probably hearing networking, because every guest has recommended this at some point or another, and they're right. But how? How do I get started? I don't know anybody. I don't know how to get, how do I meet people? Are there mixers for cybersecurity?
There are actually. So, you know, whether it's a local CSA chapter that you can go and attend, whether it's an ISSA chapter, whether it's, you know, sometimes even your city's chamber of commerce will hold events. There are things out there that are free for you to go and meet with other technology practitioners, with vendors, with, you know, executives to, you know, start those conversations. And, you know, I can't speak for obviously everybody, but at least in my section of the world here in West Michigan, you can approach anybody. And we're all one big blue team, right? So we're all very happy to share information or tips or tricks, or, you know, you need help with your resume, like send it to me. And, you know, I might not get to it right away, but eventually I will respond and, you know, maybe add these or tweak it here. You know, I just heard about this job opening. Like, you should consider this, you know? So there are a plethora of possibilities for you to start networking.
Yeah, agreed wholeheartedly. I know you're in the Grand Rapids area, and one of the best cons in the Midwest is up there, conferences. GERCON. Love it. I'm in the Columbus, Ohio area, so just a little bit further south of you, but also kind of it's not a major market. Right. It's not LA. It's not San Fran. It's not Austin. It's not, you know, New York or DC. Those all have tons and tons of options. But even here in our smaller markets, we have lots of good choices. We have a B-Sides. We have an ISSA that's amazing here in the Columbus area. You know, there's 614 Con that's been rebranded, I think, to Hackers Teaching Hackers. Even in the smaller markets, there are options out there. And then at worst, what I would recommend is hop on LinkedIn and look in your own area for people that have titles that relate to cybersecurity and reach out. Because to your point, Anthony, and I don't think it's just here in the Midwest, I travel a lot and have an opportunity to speak with, you know, blue team and cybersecurity professionals all over the world. And everyone I have met is willing to take time and have a conversation with an up and comer, right? Someone who aspires to get into the world of cybersecurity and share tips and tricks and pointers. So yes, find someone, reach out. All of us are here to help folks get moving forward.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Okay, well, folks, we are at time, and I want to say thanks to Anthony for a fantastic discussion. This has been SOC Unlocked, Tales from the Cybersecurity Frontline. I'm your host, Mick Leach, reminding all you cyber defenders out there to keep fighting the good fight. You're the tip of the spear, so stay sharp. Thanks for tuning in, and don't forget to like and subscribe and check out our other SOC Unlocked episodes. We'll see you next time. Thanks again, Anthony.
Thanks, Mick.